I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Let's get right to it. Let's get right to it. Because these talk shows are listening to my podcasts. Yes, that's true. They're listening. I'm sure they are. Because every once in a while, I hear the exact same thing that I talk about, almost in the same words. And it happened yesterday. Yes, a talk show guest, when asked about the gun control, said, "Nothing will happen until we apply big data." This is Bob Sherwood, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com on October the 8th, 2017. Now, this gentleman used the term big data. You remember that I used the term collaborative databases, accessible by all law enforcement agencies. Yes, you can write all the enforcement laws that you want, but if you do not have a specific implementation method, and that doesn't mean more police or things of that nature, it means a method by which you can deliver information about violations of the law or potential violations of the law to people who can do something about it. People keep asking, how could he buy all these guns? No problem, because every gun is a unique purchase from a database perspective, until we have big data or collaborative databases. Now, I'm not suggesting that we have a law that says you can only buy 4 guns or 5 guns, but I am suggesting that we have a database that when you buy, for example, more than 3 guns, a red flag is sent to an appropriate agency that might look into this. And when you buy 5 guns, another flag is sent. And when you buy 7 guns, another flag is sent. See, these aren't difficult things for databases to do. All of us know this who receive alerts on our iPhone for any number of things that we sign up for. So the FBI simply signs up for an alert. When anyone buys more than 7 guns in any period of time, alert me. You see, it goes back to the same things that I've been saying for a long time. It's not about laws. It's about implementation. It's no different, by the way, in business, where business sets a goal but doesn't discuss an implementation plan. As individuals, we have goals, but if we don't set an implementation plan, the goal doesn't make much sense. Laws are like goals. We pass a law. That law exists on a piece of paper somewhere that means nothing until perhaps it comes up in court. And then, of course, it's too late. It's the implementation of the law that is missing in gun control. It's the implementation of alerts that's missing in identifying people that buy multiple guns or thousands of rounds of ammunition. There just isn't that many deer out there that they're going to kill with 20 guns and 5,000 rounds of ammunition. These are obvious alerts. They're obvious to anyone that has any common sense. And I may be accused of a lot of things, but I've never been accused of not having common sense. If I'm a law enforcement agency, if I am the FBI or a local police agency, a local law enforcement agency, I would like to know if someone in my territory just bought 20 guns, and I don't care where they bought them from or what state. Collaborative databases. Databases that record things across state lines that are accessible by law enforcement agency who can put whatever alerts they want on those, on that database. No, that doesn't mean you get a call if you bought 5 guns, although you might. It would seem to me it would make sense. If you bought 5 guns and 5,000 rounds of ammunition, I think a call from the local law enforcement agency would be appropriate and not an invasion of your privacy. We just want to know what you're doing with the guns. That's all. I don't call that an invasion of privacy. And if I bought 5 guns and I've got a good reason for it, then why wouldn't I tell someone? Such as I collect guns or some other reason. And sure, somebody could come up with many, many reasons, but I would think at about 20 guns, you might warrant a visit from someone to see where your guns are and what you're doing with them. And on these devices that they put at the end of a gun that forces the recoil of the gun to shoot the gun again in more or less an artificial method, doesn't make any difference. If we don't have data controlling that, what's going to happen? Nothing. It's more important to know who's buying those and in what quantity than the law. People will find ways to get around the law. If we make it legal, if we keep gun control legal, but monitor who buys them and in what quantities, then we have a way of actually controlling it. The bad guys are going to get their guns anyway. They know how to do it. You're not going to control by laws the criminals from getting the guns. But what about people that are like this Las Vegas shooter who bought his guns legally? We can control that by collaborative databases so enforcement agencies can interrogate these databases and determine anomalies. An anomaly is like an outlier. A person who buys 30 guns in a year period is definitely an anomaly and definitely deserves a phone call. But if we don't know, we being the law enforcement agencies, then we can't do anything about it. I was delighted to hear this guest on one of the talk shows start talking about something significant about gun control when he starts talking about implementation of the laws rather than writing new laws. And that's all I'm going to say on that for now. I think I've made my point. In general, by the way, we should all have, that's not correct, we should not all have, but there should be collaborative databases across state lines that law enforcement agencies can interrogate for guns, DMV violations, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, let's give the law enforcement agencies some implementation methods that will allow them to actually enforce the law or look for anomalies in situations where the law may be about to be broken. And of course, on this Sunday, I have to make a comment on the Washington Post. And I'm not sure, but it looks like they may be taking a more positive tone toward Trump. Kind of surprises me too. They have an article, an opinion article, which is titled, Trump is on track to win re-election. That's right. It's a Washington Post article. And the first paragraph, it says, more than half of Americans don't think Donald Trump is fit to serve as president, comma, yet he has a clear path to winning re-election. Seems contradictory, but as they explain in the article, there's enough divisions in the United States that with anyone running on an independent party ticket, it splits up the vote and makes a perfect scenario for Trump to be reelected, even if most of the people don't like him, as the Washington Post says. So it's not a positive article with respect to Trump is great. It's simply saying, don't discount the fact that he's going to be reelected just because, according to the Post, the majority of people think he's inadequate as a president. And also about the popular vote. They make the point. The Washington Post says, in fact, two out of the last three presidents were elected despite losing the popular vote. And they go on to make the point that a decline in support for both political parties works to Trump's advantage. So it's a interesting article. They don't really say, oh, gee, this is horrible. They just say it looks like. It would be a big mistake to assume that Trump cannot win re-election in 2020. And they also point out that a lot of us never thought he would become president in the first place, but he did. So we should not think he's not going to do it again, despite the fact he's having trouble passing legislation, despite the fact that he has a low approval rating, and despite all of these things, the Washington Post opinion writer says, it looks like he could win re-election easily. Now, they do say he cannot win in a two-person race, which I think is perhaps incorrect. Eventually, it becomes a two-person race, although they define a two-person race as not having an independent party collect votes. So they think if there was no independent party, it was just him running against Joe Biden, for example, Biden would win in a two-person race. But that's hypothetical, speculative, and it's not going to happen. There's going to be an independent party candidate, and it's going to take votes away from one side or the other, maybe more from the Democrats than the Republicans. So the scene is set for Trump to be reelected. For me, I don't think he's going to run again. I think he's going to defer to Pence or somebody else. Why should he? It's got to be more fun playing golf than dealing with a bunch of children in politics. That's really what it amounts to, is dealing with a bunch of children. So that's all I'm going to say for today. I'm glad the talk shows are taking up the things that I have already talked about. You see more and more talk shows now mentioning or having someone mention that Medicare may be the best way to go for everybody. If you don't get health insurance through your employer, sign up for Medicare. That seems to work for 55 million Americans now. It certainly would work for another 10 or 15 million Americans. And don't bring up the issue of who's going to pay for it, because one way or the other, we're going to pay for it anyway. So whether we throw more money into Medicare to take care of the next 15 million people that can't afford it, coming from Obamacare, doesn't make a lot of difference. We're going to pay for it anyway. And I think it's easy. Take all the people on Obamacare, transfer them over to Medicare. If they can't afford it, subsidize them. That's what we're doing now, and that's not going to change. I don't care what the Republicans try to do to the health care. Fundamentally, we've accepted as a nation we're going to take care of another 15 million people that can't afford health insurance. So let's just face up to that. And the argument really should be how we're going to do it, the implementation, because we're going to spend the money anyway. No matter how much the Republicans try to change the fundamental concept of ensuring these 15 million people, plus or minus, they can't afford it, the nation has already decided we're going to take care of them. That's what we're doing now with Obamacare. So changing the name of Obamacare, changing some of the nuances of Obamacare, doesn't relieve the fundamental idea that we're going to take care of these 15 million people who can't afford it. I say, transfer them all over to Medicare. If they can't afford the $200 a month for Medicare, subsidize them. That's what we're doing now. That's all I'm going to talk about on October the 8th, 2017, on this Sunday. I hope I've given you some things to think about. When you jump on the gun control bandwagon, no matter how much you jump on it or which way you jump on it, think about not just the law, but the ability to implement the law. Otherwise, we just have a law that says, hey, nobody should shoot anybody. And guess what? People would shoot people anyway, even though we had a law. See, implementation trumps the words of the law. I say let's spend some money on implementation and give our law enforcement agencies the data they need to look for these anomalies, these outlying incidents. That's what they are. They're anomalies. Whether this guy was crazy in Las Vegas or not, he's an aberrant. But in order to track down the aberrants, we need to get data about purchasing levels before the crazy person, the anomaly, shoots up another concert or football game or baseball game. I don't know why it's taken so long for congressmen to get up and just say, big data will help us. So I was tickled to hear somebody say it the other day on the air. I wish they'd have given him more airtime, but because it makes so much sense to do it, the normal hosts would rather talk about gun control and the NRA and what Trump says and the tweets and not about things we can do to make our lives a little bit better. Bob Sherwood, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com on this October the 8th, 2017, signing off. Have a great day. Keep listening, keep commenting, and listen again tomorrow because I've got the most provocative thing I can think about coming up on my podcast in the next 2 days. Listen in. Courtesy of